Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll hear from the Minnesota National Guard's agribusiness team in Afghanistan, and we'll talk to a Vietnam veteran of the United States Marine Corps. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
As the Adjutant General, I'm committed to the continual improvement of our operations. Therefore, it is a part of my policy and my vision to generate obtainable goals that lead to a sustainable future for the Minnesota National Guard. Currently, these goals address integration of the environmental management with mission, regulatory compliance, pollution prevention, and environmental awareness. To implement my vision, we have designated three objectives that align with Executive Order 13423. With multiple targets that implement strategies to reduce energy consumption, minimize encroachment around Camp Ripley, and reduce waste. These objectives align with planning and create sustainable daily practices. Some of these initiatives can simply be low-cost solutions such as turning lights off, doing lighting upgrades, installing new fixtures that reduce the amount of water used, and taking air infiltration measures by insulating our workspace. On a larger scale, the Minnesota Army National Guard has installed a geothermal heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system at Camp Ripley and is evaluating the use of wind and solar power to reduce our dependence on electricity in the spirit of Army's net zero initiatives. Additionally, we are promoting more efficient facilities through leadership in energy and environmental design, or LEED, construction and renovation practices. These initiatives have an immediate impact on the amount of energy used, which in turn reduces the energy costs for the agency. By implementing these measures, we will improve awareness of our sustainable practices, save money, and become better stewards of our environment. I fully support our environmental goals and objectives as they benefit the training our soldiers receive, improve mission readiness, and increase our ability to protect the resources and citizens of our state.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Joining us now is the commander of the Minnesota Agribusiness Development Team from Afghanistan, Colonel Eric Aldous. Colonel, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you very much, Tom. Glad to be here, and thank you for inviting me today.
Colonel, it's been about 6 months since we talked to you out at the state fair, and I understand the weather's a lot different in Afghanistan right now.
Absolutely. We've had a cold and snowy winter here, and we're expecting more snow later tonight and tomorrow. Estimates go as high as 20 inches of snow, so that's all good for us people from Minnesota, but some of my members from Mississippi, they've had about enough snow here.
Colonel, for those that might not have listened to our show last August from the State Fair, can you explain to us what the 135th Agribusiness Development Team, what your mission is and what you're doing in Afghanistan?
Absolutely. What we are doing is we're stationed within Zabul province, which is in southern Afghanistan. It's a high desert area. The elevation of the base we're at is about 5,500 feet, and there's mountains in the area that go up to about 14,000 feet. But despite it being a high desert, it's a very rich agricultural area that produces more almonds, more pomegranates, and almost as many raisins and grapes as any other area in the country. So what we want to do is help the economic development of this province so that the people have a sustainable lifestyle and they are prosperous enough so that they turn away from some of the negative ways of the past and can go into the future successfully. And the best way that we do that is we work with the government of Afghanistan, their Department of Agriculture within the Zabul province, and we help build their capacity and help build an extension system, just like we have in the United States, to help the farmers and the different people throughout the province become more prosperous.
Colonel, when we talked last year, you were explaining to me that the Minnesota National Guard is a tremendous resource with citizen soldiers. Can you tell us, how did you build your team, and did their civilian expertise, areas of expertise, come into play in building the team?
Absolutely, and that's that was one of the foundations of building the team, was that the people in the National Guard, not only do we have the military skills that make us qualified soldiers come over here and be successful, but more importantly, we can take the skills that we learned in our civilian life and apply them within the agribusiness system. So fortunate enough, I had a peer who I worked with a number of times who was a very strong agronomist, Lieutenant Colonel Ken DeGeer. And with him, we put together a team of 12 agricultural experts, everything from someone who is a hydrologist and a bee expert to a person who works for Cargill as a value chain developer, someone who is a vet tech, so they can help with animal health areas. And we even have a university professor who's very well versed in agribusiness management and business practices. But all those people come together and lend their skills together to help us across the spectrum here in Afghanistan. And then also, I deliberately made sure I picked at least, I was aiming for 6 to 8 female members, so that way when we come over here, we could have a female engagement team so they could help the most disadvantaged group, the widows from 30 years of war here, and help them develop business and economic benefits so that they could stand on their own and be successful.
We're speaking with Colonel Eric Alness, commander of the Minnesota Agribusiness Development Team from Zabul Province, Afghanistan, on Minnesota Military Radio, right here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Colonel, after you put together your team, I'm assuming, and I've read, that conditions in Afghanistan are a bit different than they are here in the United States for agribusiness. How did you prepare? How did you train for this mission?
Well, the first thing we did is actually went down to southern Minnesota and we went to Amish farm because we wanted to get a different perspective, a different cultural perspective about how can you successfully grow agriculture and use sustainable methods without electricity. Here in Zabul province, the only place there's electricity is in the provincial capital, and that's for about 10,000 people. Otherwise, the only other electricity throughout the entire rest of the province for somewhere between 275 to 400,000 people is what's either collected on a limited basis with solar power or a little bit of generators. So we had to really step back in time and figure out how could we build sustainable processes and be successful. And then from there, we did training with North Dakota State University, because that's where my university professor, Major Cheryl Wackenheim, came from. And then we also worked with a lot of nonprofits like Compatible Technologies International that reverse engineers and makes things simple that can be sustained in third world countries. And then we also worked with CHS, Cenex Harvest States, who really helped us figure out how do you develop cooperatives and work towards that end so that we could help these farmers work together to get some unity in their agricultural efforts. And then, of course, we had to go out to California. That was a tough trip, but we went out there to really learn the specifics on almonds and raisins and grapes and some of those products that just aren't grown in Minnesota.
Colonel, sounds like you did a lot of training. Did you have the benefit of some information from prior agribusiness teams that had gone to Afghanistan?
Yes. When we were notified of the mission last year, first thing we did is we started attending different training sessions. We went to a seminar that was hosted by National Guard Bureau where all the teams that were training up to deploy to Afghanistan learned the fundamentals. And then last May, we had an opportunity to come to Afghanistan for about 2 weeks, spend time with the team that was on the ground here, and learn from the benefit of their experience. And then when we deployed here in November, there was about a two-week overlap between us and the previous team. where they really, they call it right seat, left seat ride, where we just spend every day with them. And the first half of it, they're in control. And the second half, we're in control, and they're just kind of guiding us along. And then after we have the transition of authority, they go home, and then we carry on with the mission.
Well, we have to take a short break. When we return, we'll come back with Colonel Eric Alness, the commander of the 135th Agribusiness Development Team, and learn how the mission is going. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Tom Lyons, and we're speaking with Colonel Eric Alness, the commander of the Minnesota Agribusiness Development Team from Zabul Province, Afghanistan. Colonel, once you finally got over to Afghanistan, you've been there for a while now, how are conditions and how are the members of your team?
I tell you, the members of the teams are doing very, very well. Just like sometimes in Minnesota, you get into the winter doldrums, and I could tell that recently here that everyone's kind of feeling a little bit down. So we kind of challenged people to some kind of informal games to maybe put some postings online for kind of creative Valentine's Day and so forth. And our family readiness group in January, they came together and had a meeting talking about different things that families face while they're separated. And they made up some really nice fabric-covered hearts that they filled with different candy. And they sent that over to me. So on Valentine's Day, then I gave that to all the troops and distributed to them and passed on the love and caring of the families, and even said that, you know, by chance, if, you know, they're not quite rounded or something like that, it was a kid's project, so take it with the love that it was intended. And one of the lieutenants yelled out in the background, yeah, and if there's a bite over one of the candy bars, it was probably my daughter who did that. But anyway, so we took pictures and posted online so the families could see, and we're really pleased to see that the Army, the U.S. Army, picked it up and posted on their website, as well as several other military organizations. And I hear, too, that even some local papers published that. So that just really meant a lot to the families and the soldiers here, letting people know how much they cared for us and how the separation impacts families and the love that they feel for each other. But, yeah, so that kind of buffed everyone up, and we're ready to go now and ready to take on the next snowstorm that comes our way.
And for our listeners, if you want to see a copy of that picture, we'll have it posted at Minnesota Military Radio Hour immediately following the show. Colonel, it sounds like you did a lot of training when you went over there, and now that you're there and you've been there for a while, how have you been received by the Afghani people, and how's the mission going?
The mission is going very well. When we first took over the mission in November, of course, winter started coming, and we found that some of the missions that we're going to go out and execute in the different districts within the province, we're going to have to cancel, because if we don't have air cover in case an accident or an incident should happen, we always want to make sure that medevac could be in the area. And so with some of the bad weather, we weren't able to get out to accomplish our mission. So what we decided to do is that we have different bases throughout the province. So, in fact, there are some demonstration farms that earlier teams had built in the area in the south and in the north. So we deployed teams out to those areas, and it was a little bit rough at first because the conditions were a little bit primitive, but the teams really, really bucked up, and they worked hard, and they made the areas their own. And we found that they've really built good relationship with the local government officials and village elders, working very well with the other coalition partners. We have a number of Romanian units over here that we work with very closely, as well as a number of U.S. units from out at Fort Lewis, Washington. And what we're finding is that they're able to conduct a lot more missions on a lot more personal basis and make a difference in people's lives by being out there. So we're going to continue to replicate that and build upon that. And then when we get into the spring season and weather gets to be a lot more clear and hot here, then we'll be doing more pushed-out missions with air missions and so forth to other regions in the province. But we found it to work very well.
We're speaking with Colonel Eric Alness, commander of the Minnesota Agribusiness Development Team from Zabul Province, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Colonel, we were talking about all the snow and spring coming up. Are you able to talk to some of the Afghani people and help them figure out how to plant and get ready for spring? And are some of those things, are you making a difference?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the way that we're making a difference is we're really identifying a lot of systemic problems that they're facing in this country. For example, the health of their livestock is not really good, and they have some diseases that really limit the health of livestock and can even be spread to humans, like anthrax and hoof and mouth disease. So we've made a concerted effort with our veterinarian to go out working with the local paravets, which are kind of like a veterinary technician in the U.S., and the government veterinarians to try to cover as much of the area as possible to increase the health of the herds, because really the livestock that families have a lot of times is the wealth of the family. And we've even had a recent meeting just this last week with the Minister of Coochie Affairs, and the Coochie is a migratory people. There's about 53,000 that move in and out of the district on an annual basis. And we're going to set up with him mobile veterinarian locations this spring, so as the people come in, their herds will be inoculated. So we hope that will help the overall health of the livestock in the area. Another project we're doing is there's a regional livestock market right on the slopes of Alexander the Great's castle, right here in the capital of Kalat, Zabul province. And they buy and sell about 1,000 animals a day and butcher a great number of those right on the slope of the hill. And we're working with a private-public partnership that's going to build a slaughterhouse so that the meat's of a higher quality and will be inspected by the government veterinarians. And then we're going to cooperate by building a stockyard right next to it. And we're already getting interest for some private ventures to build a restaurant and a hotel. Now, these are all going to be really basic types of facilities. But the thing is, this is a regional market for livestock that they've been looking for a good site for about the last 10 years. And now this is an opportunity where it's coming in and a lot of people are getting excited. And that excitement turns into stability and success for the province.
Colonel, we've got about a minute left, but I understand there's a documentary underway on your mission. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, we're very fortunate that TPT is going to be sending a reporter to Afghanistan in April, and he's going to be spending, I think his blog said, 10 days in the sand. So he's going to be with us for about a week and a half, and we're going to take him all over the province and let him see a lot of different things, what we're doing with livestock, what we're doing with agronomy and water and bees, and just have them get a real good view of what's going on in probably one of the more desolate but really productive areas in Afghanistan.
It'll be Luke Eichler from TPT. We had him on a couple of months ago, and he's scheduled to come back and visit with us right after he comes back from seeing you, Colonel. So we're excited to see what he learns over there. Any final thoughts for our listeners, sir?
Just appreciate the great support we're getting, not only, like I mentioned, our families before, but from people across Minnesota and across the nation. Literally on a daily basis, we'll get in about 5 or 10 care packages, a lot of times from complete strangers who just want to make sure that the service members are taken care of. And every time one of those boxes come in with some, whether it be some toiletries or food or candy or just, you know, well wishes, it really warms the heart. And sometimes we might have a little extra, and then what we do is share with some of the other units here that maybe don't have quite the supporter network that we have, and that really brightens their day and makes their load on their shoulders a little lighter as well. So we appreciate the support of everyone from Minnesota and across the U.S. who is so kind to us over here.
Colonel, thanks for taking time out of your busy day to join us, and please stay warm and stay safe.
Thank you very much, Tom. Have a great day.
That was Colonel Eric Alness, commander of the Minnesota Agribusiness Development Team from Zabul Province, Afghanistan. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase and discuss the highlights of the Hastings Yellow Ribbon Network's outreach efforts in 2011. Last week, Julie Spade called Beyond the Yellow Ribbon and asked, what does the Yellow Ribbon Network do? They could have told her all of the outstanding efforts of nearly 100 communities with Yellow Ribbon Networks across Minnesota, but they started by sharing with her what was going on in just one and pulled out the Yellow Ribbon Network of Hastings annual report. Topping the list for Hastings Network were veterans' remembrance ceremonies and patriotic observances. On Memorial Day, over 1,000 flags and bronze stars were placed on gravestones. And to show veterans they weren't forgotten, volunteers visited area nursing homes on Veterans Day. Volunteers in the Hastings Network were part of more than 40 events honoring local veterans. They showed their support of military spouses and moms by hosting an event for them on Mother's Day. During the month of the military child, in April, volunteers organized a social outing to recognize the sacrifices made by military kids. All this in addition to helping several military families out around the house while a loved one was deployed. Countless other community outreach events could have been shared with Julie, but she was quickly getting the point. Thank you, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon of Hastings, for showcasing how Yellow Ribbon networks go beyond the yellow ribbon for service members and their families. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is a comprehensive program that creates awareness, connecting service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. Get involved in your local network by finding the Join a Yellow Ribbon Network button at beyondtheyellowribbon.org. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, united to bring service members all the way home. Coming up next, we'll talk with Dick Tice, a Vietnam veteran of the United States Marine Corps, on Minnesota Military Radio right here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelledo.
Please consider driving home your support for Minnesota military members, veterans, and their families by purchasing a Support Our Troops license plate for your car or motorcycle. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, together with the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, will use your annual minimum contribution of $30 for the betterment of military families and homeless and underserved veterans across the state. Deployments and military service can put a strain on families, their finances, and their health. Here's how your donation helps Minnesota military veterans and families. Benefits Corps, which provides family counseling with specialty services available to children, financial counseling, debt management, and mental health counseling. It also provides emergency financial assistance, as well as grants through our Support Our Troops program. Helping homeless veterans secure shelter and access to benefits. Provides outreach to diverse communities across Minnesota, helping provide veterans with access to the benefits they have earned. And provides community seminars on health conditions associated with military service. To purchase Support Our Troops plates, visit your local Department of Motor Vehicles or call 651-4-TROOPS. Support Our Troops plates are also available from dealerships. Be sure to ask about Support Our Troops plates when you purchase your next new or used vehicle.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelledo. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Joining me now is Dick Tice, one of Minnesota's many Vietnam veterans and a veteran of the financial industry in the Twin Cities for quite a few years. Dick, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to be here.
Dick, a few years back, you were in the Marine Corps.
Quite a few years ago, as a matter of fact, yes.
Tell us about your youth and how did you end up in the Marine Corps?
Well, I want to go back too far in my youth. A lot of things here I'm not proud of, but I joined the Marine Corps right out of high school when I was 17 and went to boot camp in San Diego. Yeah, I went to infantry training at Camp Pendleton and Communication Electronics School at San Diego again. Was my first duty station was at Camp Pendleton. And then in July of 65, I hopped aboard a ship on my way to Okinawa and later caught an airplane down to South Vietnam at Da Nang.
Vietnam. How did you feel being an 18-year-old right out of high school in the Marine Corps and on the way to a foreign country, Vietnam? Of course, you know, I was stationed in Vietnam in a few years after you.
Yes. We had to pave the way for you.
Yes, you did. Always send in the Marines first, Dick.
That's correct.
How did you feel about that?
Well, I was apprehensive. The fact that I was in a foreign country is one thing, but to be going into a war zone was another thing altogether. Didn't know what to expect. A lot of apprehension, as I said. First thing I remember getting off the plane was the heat, oppressive heat. And I think once I got to my unit, which was on the outskirts in the hills in Da Nang, It took me about 3 weeks to get acclimated to the heat and humidity there. I lost probably 15 pounds in the first month.
Did the Marine Corps prepare you for what you saw there the first month?
Yes, I think so. I think we had some of the best training you can get. I had a briefing before I left Camp Pendleton for cultural issues, weather, history of the country, history of the French involvement in Vietnam. So we had a good background of what was going on, what had gone on prior to our going there.
And Dick, what was your job in the Marines when you got there?
I was in communications, radio, message center, wire. And I was assigned to a artillery unit of the 12th Marine Regiment, a part of the 3rd Marine Division.
So when you hit Vietnam, you're out of Da Nang?
Correct. We were in the hills surrounding Da Nang. Some of the veterans might remember Da Nang, a place called Hill 327, which was prominent hill outside of Da Nang. It was kind of the high ground. We were in that little mountain range there. And shortly after I arrived at Da Nang in the unit, I was sent up to one of our battalions, the 4th Battalion, which was up in the northern part of I Corps, just south of Wei, a little place called Phu Bai.
We're speaking with Dick Tice, a Minnesota Vietnam veteran, the United States Marine Corps, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Dick, when you went up to Phu Bai, what were you doing? Forward observer?
Not right away. I got some training. I carried the radio and one of the four-man teams for the forward observers for the 155 howitzer batteries. And I was not a trained artillery specialist. We had a fire direction officer with us who did all of the number crunching and coordinates, et cetera, for the fire missions that we would call in. I simply parroted the information back to the fire direction center where the guns were located.
So you were out in your four-man unit was assigned to another unit that was out in the thick of it then? Or?
We traveled alone. We were just the four of us would be dropped off by helicopter into a pre-designated landing.
In support of other operations?
Correct. We would be out there to provide intelligence and also to call in fire missions where we were appropriate.
And how long were you in Vietnam?
13 months.
13 months. And was most of it up in the north?
Most of it was up at, most of it was in Da Nang. After I came back from several missions up there, our unit moved south towards Da Nang again. And we, again, were on the outskirts of Da Nang, place called Hill 55. And that's where I was when I rotated out the country.
Dick, you're a young man, Marine Corps, served a tour of duty in Vietnam. It changes you. What did you learn in that year? How did you feel?
I think I grew up pretty quickly. A lot of responsibility for a young person. Even though I wasn't in combat all the time, or that wasn't my job, I wasn't an infantryman, there's a tension just being there. And part of that was the job I had, being out in the boonies, get you. But I think I realized I grew up in that year, attained a maturity level that I hadn't had previously. I had 14 more months to do once I came back to the States, so I wasn't out yet. I still had some more time to do.
That year that you were there, you knew that we were losing people and people getting injured every day.
Absolutely.
And it wears on you, doesn't it?
It does.
Dick, we've got to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about that and about homecoming and what it was like in the United States back in that time, which is a lot different than it is today and a lot different support or lack of support in those days than what we have for the troops today.
Right.
So we're going to take a short break. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and I'm speaking with Dick Tice, one of Minnesota's many Vietnam veterans who served in the United States Marine Corps and did a tour of duty in Vietnam in 65 and 66. Dick, you're in the Marine Corps, forward observer, artillery. You were in Vietnam for how long?
13 months.
And what was the last day or days like when you before you came home?
Well, I was getting short, so I knew that my time, if they were accurate with our tour of duty being 13 months shore to shore, that I would be going home pretty soon in about the middle of July. And we got a call on the radio that I had to be down at the Da Nang Air Base that afternoon to get ready to leave. So I didn't have much time. I was out on doing something with the division unit and got a call on the radio that I had to return to our camp. I did. I went back, and the guys there had packed all my stuff for me, threw it in a Jeep, and we head out to the airbase.
Sounded like they wanted you gone, Dick.
Yeah. That was okay with me. And I got there, and we didn't move out again until the next morning. But got on the plane the next morning, and as soon as that plane lifted off into the air, we were flying over the South China Sea, and a cheer went up in that airplane.
Did on my airplane when we took off too, Dick. For that 13 months you were there, were you able to get any information on what was going on back in the United States, what the climate was, political climate, and what was going on here?
Well, no, not really. The only thing we got was we'd get the Stars and Stripes newspaper occasionally, and that didn't have much coverage on what was going on as far as protesting, that sort of thing. And letters from home, when we'd get them, were made reference to it and talked about it a little bit. But no, we had no idea the feeling and the sentiment back in the States towards us.
It was a different time in the United States. There were draft dodgers and anti-war riots and race riots and a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
How was your homecoming?
Quiet. my younger brother was stationed at Camp Pendleton, and he was in the 4th Marine Division at the staging battalion at Camp Pendleton. He was leaving to go over right behind me. So I stopped at Camp Pendleton because I was on leave as soon as I landed at El Toro Marine Base. And I spent a couple of days with my brother before he went over, and then I flew home to Minneapolis.
What did you find? How were you treated?
Initially, we're treated fine. I soon learned that there was a kind of an undercurrent of I don't know what it is to this day about the troops. It was not okay to talk about our experiences in casual conversation with people. Family certainly was different. I was welcomed by my family greatly, and some friends. Some friends not so greatly.
We got out of uniform and we started to blend into civilian society, and they really didn't want us talking about it, did they?
No, they didn't. I don't know why they thought that, and it's something I wasn't prepared for. I wasn't prepared for the animosity that occurred not only to me but to others. I had 14 months to do on my enlistment, so I wasn't out of the Marine Corps yet. I didn't get out till November of 1967, but I just wanted to get on with my life, go to college, and get on with some kind of career.
And move forward.
Correct.
Dick, we've also in the studio, we've got Staff Sergeant Ben Houtcooper, who's a member of the Minnesota National Guard, and he served in Iraq. And Sergeant Houtcooper, what's going on today is dramatically different.
Absolutely, absolutely different.
What kind of a welcome back do the units get when they come back now?
I was telling you the story earlier, and I'll tell you again. I can't remember what trip it was on, but I was coming back from somewhere overseas, and it was Bangor, Maine. Middle of the night, it was 3 a.m., and we get into this completely deserted airport, and I think it was about maybe 10, 20 of us that were on this commercial flight, that was it, and we're walking down the entire airport, it's completely deserted, completely quiet, and we come around this corner, and there standing in front of us is a group of, you don't call them former Marines, what do you call them?
Marines.
Marines, roger. Older gentleman.
Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Absolutely. But there's two ranks of them, red jackets, standing at attention, just clapping us home, welcoming us, shaking every single hand, saying thank you for your service. And this is 3 a.m. in the morning in Bangor, Maine. And it was just, it took me back knowing that they took the time out of their night to come and welcome us home. And it's, I've been there and back so many times, and every single time it's the same thing. It's nothing but the greatest support.
And routinely today, when the National Guard units leave and when they come back, they're accompanied by the Minnesota Patriot Guard and families, and doesn't matter if it's the middle of the night or middle of the afternoon, they're there. And Dick, I like to think you and I and some of our buddies from Vietnam raised our children to support the troops and to honor those who serve and separate the politics of war from that. I think we've made an impact. How do you feel about what Sergeant Houtkooper has told us?
I think it's a great story and very deserving to be welcomed like that. When we came back from Vietnam, we didn't come back in units. We came back as individuals. The units stayed overseas, stayed in Vietnam, and we came back as individual Marines. I wasn't prepared, I did not expect to have any kind of a welcome home ceremony that was a parade or anything like that. We didn't feel entitled, and never even dawned on us that we should be welcomed home like that. We're just getting out of the country and getting home alive was the main thing. And that said a lot. A lot of guys just wanted to get home and get on with their lives.
Dick, I know in recent years I've been thanked a few times for my service in Vietnam. I'm sure you have too, and it's a surprise to me. Any final thoughts for our listeners and the young people today about a Marine served in Vietnam, 1965?
I think the message is that wherever they are, show respect and dignity to our veterans, especially the older ones. Volunteer if you want to. The VA hospitals, we've got one of the finest VA hospitals in the country right here in Minneapolis, and I've got friends that are volunteers out there. And if someone wants to help, that's a good way to start.
Dick, I'd like to thank you for joining us on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thanks for having me.
This is Dick Tice, one of our Minnesota's Vietnam veterans and a member of the United States Marine Corps, served a tour of duty in Vietnam from 1965 to 66. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Joining us now is the senior advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg, and Major Aaron Krenz, Chief of Deployment Cycle Support and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio.
Morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Morning, Major. Sergeant Major, our topic today is resilience training. And what is the National Guard doing to keep a ready force these days?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Let me talk a little bit about the resilience training that you just mentioned. As we've seen in our society as a whole, to include the Minnesota National Guard, we've seen an increasing rate of suicide in recent years, and the Minnesota National Guard is simply a reflection of society, what we're seeing in society. So to that end, we put together a program. This was done at the Army level as well as the Air Force level, but tweaked a little bit in Minnesota for the Minnesota National Guard, to put together a program that builds resiliency in our soldiers. The Army has a program called Comprehensive Soldier Fitness Program, and similarly, the Air Force has a program called the Comprehensive Airman Fitness Program, which include a bunch of different things that we'll talk about in a minute. But one of the major things that they have is something called a Master Resilience Trainer. And those people are identified to help train resiliency in our force.
Master Resilience Trainers. Now, what is their job and how do they help?
Well, this is Major Aaron Krenz, but Master Resilience Trainers are select individuals that the chain of command has identified as influential leaders within their unit, and they go to an extensive 10-day training course to help come back and train our service members in the modules of being resilient. We've seen the response back from these service members from this training has been outstanding, and we've seen definitely an increase in the training of our force by these Master Resilient Trainers. Likewise, they can't do it alone. They help train resilient training assistants. And our goal is to get these down to the company and flight levels in the Army and Air National Guard.
And each of our soldiers and airmen receive 2 hours of training quarterly on resilience.
Sergeant Major, can you put this in English for me? Why is this resiliency training so important?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. One of the big reasons for us is readiness. We want to have as a goal of this program to have balanced and healthy and self-confident soldiers and airmen, family members, and civilian. We want to make sure that their fitness enables them to excel in an era of high tempo and persistent conflict. We look at issues like physical, emotional, social, spiritual, and family strength to keep our soldiers and airmen resilient. It really does promote self-awareness and optimism, mental agility, all things that are going to be maximizing the potential for each of our soldiers and airmen.
So this is a proactive attempt to keep the Minnesota National Guard ready to go.
Absolutely.
Sergeant Major, thanks for joining us today. Major Kranz, thanks for stopping in.
Thank you.
That was Major Aaron Kranz, Chief of Deployment Cycle Support, and Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg, the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard. Thank you. We're just about out of time, but before we go, here are a few upcoming events. This coming weekend is Military Appreciation Weekend at the Theaters of Mall of America. They'll have free popcorn, 2-for-1s at the Star Bar, and $6 admission to Act of Valor, the new film featuring the Navy SEALs. This coming weekend is also our Yellow Ribbon Rendezvous at Craigens Resort near Gull Lake. Yellow Ribbon volunteers and their families are invited for a fun-filled, family-friendly weekend of events and networking with other volunteers from across the state. And February 29th, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs invites you to Leaders in Veterans Employment, a working seminar in St. Paul. Please RSVP by Monday. For details on all these events and more, check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Become a fan or follower and tell us what you think. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel Eric Allness of the Minnesota National Guard's Agribusiness Team, Vietnam veteran of the United States Marine Corps, Dick Tice, and our senior enlisted advisor to the Adjutant General, Command Sergeant Major Cindy Kahlberg, Commissioner Larry Shelladeau, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week for a live show from the Yellow Ribbon Rendezvous at Craigens Resort on Gull Lake. That's next Sunday morning at 7, right here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.